It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me, and we're joined now by Larry Tye, who has written a history of the Man of Steel. The book is called Superman, the High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. Larry's going to be here in St. Louis next Thursday, making an appearance at the J with copies of his book and talking about Superman and taking Q&A. And he's here to join us now here on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing just great. How old is Superman?
So last June, he turned 75, which makes him the longest surviving American hero of the last century.
And in those 75 years, we've seen different forms of Superman in comic books and in video games and on TV and in movies. And I'm curious about whether the guy who invented Superman got rich off of it.
So the guy who invented Superman was Jerry Siegel, and he did it with his buddy Joe Shuster, two teenagers from Cleveland, Ohio, who sold the rights to Superman. They were so desperate to find a publisher that they sold the rights to Superman in 1938 for $130 to be divided between the two of them. And that was the rights not just to that first comic book, but the rights to the character in every medium forever.
Oh, no! Oh, $65 each, and that was it?
That was it. It makes what the Indians got for selling Manhattan look like a real bargain.
Wow. Did they at least get a copy of a Superman comic book issue number one, which has got to be very valuable today?
Yeah, they got lots of copies of it. And what they also got was a job that ended up paying them. The bad news was they sold it for a steal. The good news was that these two obscure kids in Cleveland ended up having jobs that in today's dollars were paying them a couple $100,000 a year, and they ended up becoming famous.
What was the job?
The job was writing Superman for as long as they could do it until they kept filing lawsuits. Just about every 10 years from 1938 on, they'd be working for DC Comics, making a good salary, going from their mother's attics to owning wonderful homes across the country, and just about every 10 years they'd get angry and they would think, geez, we deserve more. We created this billion-dollar character. So they would sue DC Comics, they would lose, they would raise their right hands and promise they would never sue again if they could have their jobs back, and that would last for about 10 more years.
How many times did they go through that?
Well, they went through it often enough that supposedly on his deathbed, Jerry Siegel, who died in the 1990s, told his heirs that he wanted them to continue the lawsuit. And they did that, and they've just lost at the federal appeals court level. They could have been made rich. DC Comics and Warner Brothers have wanted to settle with them and get them off their backs for a long time. And instead, the lawsuits keep going on. And unfortunately, Jerry's widow died a year ago, and his only heir that's left is a daughter.
What were they wanting to settle? I mean, how much do you know?
Well, they would have loved tens of millions of dollars, and the settlement would have had more like single digits, but in the millions, and it would have made them rich in it. And DC Comics and Warner Brothers, since 1978, when the first Christopher Reeve movie came out, Warner Brothers decided, having Jerry and Joe around claiming that they were being taken advantage of, was bad publicity. And so Warner Brothers was paying them an annual annuity, paying them a couple $100,000 every year or so, and taking care of their medical bills.
Wow.
And then wanted to have a final settlement, which would have made them millionaires.
And they wouldn't go for it.
And they didn't go for it. They felt like, as the people who created the character, that they were owed more. And, you know, you could argue that they should have been paid more, but nobody made them sign that first contract. They were desperate for a publisher, and I think they would have paid somebody $130 just to publish it.
Man.
All right, let's get away from the financial aspect of Superman. I when I was a kid, I used to watch the Superman TV show with George Reeves. And then when I grew up, I remember Jerry Seinfeld doing the classic routine about the bad guys on the TV show, which he also watched when he was a kid, who would always encounter Superman and take out their guns, and they would shoot at him, and the bullets, of course, would bounce off. And Seinfeld would say, so what's the next thing they would do? They would throw their guns at him.
And then he would duck. He would duck so it wouldn't hit him.
That was brilliant, and that was so... As an adult going back and rewatching those George Reeve TV shows, there were all those things that we believed that a guy jumping on a trampoline and being held up in the air by a crane with fans blowing wind by him, we believed that that was a guy flying. We wanted so badly to believe in Superman that the fact that George Reeves, this wonderful, strong character who couldn't act worth a damn, the difference between his Superman and his Clark Kent was putting on or taking off his glasses.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
He wanted to believe.
Yeah. By the way, that TV show was directly responsible for my friend Gil breaking his leg when we went to the garage out back of the apartments where we lived, because all kids in those days stole one of Mom's white or yellow towels, or red towels if you had one. Nobody had red towels in those days. You had white or yellow towels, and you would draw the S on there with a magic marker. Yeah. and tie it around your neck and jump off of something and pretend to fly. And we all went to the garage, and we all jumped off except for Gil, who broke his leg. That's like just a classic Superman story, isn't it?
It is, and that's actually what... So in the course of writing the book, I stumbled upon Jerry Siegel's 150-page memoir explaining where Superman came from, and that jumping off the garage is something that Jerry did, and he got badly bruised. There were kids who tried to do that who were... In the course of, again, doing research for the book, I came across more clippings of kids who died trying to do that, and it really... So the good news was that all your friend Gil did was break his leg. The bad news was lots of kids had really bad things happening to them, and George Reeves was perpetually out there trying to warn kids, don't do what I did.
I got to go back to what you were mentioning a moment ago about the glasses. Was there anyone at any time who said, you know, this is the lamest disguise ever, a guy who just puts on glasses and stands a little bit taller?
And put a hat on.
And put a hat on, right?
Yeah. So the deal is that everybody said that, and in the course of going out and doing talks on this book, I've met the woman who played Lois Lane for longer than anybody, Noelle Neal, mm-hmm. who's there in the pillbox hat in that same suit that you wore all the time, and Jimmy Olsen, the guy Jack Larson who played Jimmy Olsen in that George Reeves TV series, and they said people must have thought that we were dumber than a stone wall in terms of accepting that that was Superman and that we didn't know that he was Clark Kent. And at one point in the comic books, trying to answer that question of just how dumb people could be, they came up with this device saying that there was something in Clark Kent's glasses that hypnotized readers, and that's why they would believe that that Superman was somebody that they weren't supposed to know was Clark Kent.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
And the readers bought that, huh?
Well, at least they did for that issue. I don't know. But the great thing, again, is what all of this said is we wanted a hero so badly that we would believe just about anything. And, again, I mentioned this memoir of Jerry Siegel's. What Jerry told us, what I think is the key to why Superman lasted for 75 years, is something that Jerry told us in that memoir. And what he said was he was a kid who every day when he went out on the playground was a little bit too short and was a little bit too fat and had glasses that looked more like Coke bottles than glasses. And he was perpetually teased. He was a bullied kid, as we would define him in today's terms. And he devised this hero because he wanted those girls who were making fun of him on the playground to see that if they looked deeply enough within him, he had a Superman in there. And I think that we're all, to some extent, we've all at some point in our lives been bullied, and we all want to believe in this hero in a way that I think Jerry struck magic when he invented him for all the bullied kids like him.
Absolutely. Of course, in real life, when Jerry took off his glasses, he didn't turn into Superman. He turned into Jerry, who now can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, that was actually his buddy Joe, the artist, who ended up not being able to see anything to the point where in the end he could only draw the Superman heads and somebody else had to draw the bodies. His eyesight The one thing that mattered the most to him as an artist, he lost. And Jerry lost his sense of vision after a while in terms of the stories, and he was eventually replaced in the comic book.
Hey, I only remember Superman or Clark Kent running into a phone booth only a couple times because he always ran into an alley or ran into a some office or something like that, and then he jumped out of that window.
Yeah.
Always jumped out of the window in Perry White's office or something like that.
And there was that joke in the first Christopher Reeve movie where he runs up to a payphone on the street in the days when we still had payphones on the street, and it's not a phone booth, it's just a phone on a pole.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. And that was the wonderful thing about Christopher Reeve was not just that they had perfected his technique of flying, but he actually had a sense of humor and surprises, he actually knew how to act. And when he changed from Clark Kent to Superman, he changed the part on his hair to the other side. He lost about 2 inches when he was slumping, and he really had you convinced that these guys looked enough differently that you might buy it. But he also, in things like that phone booth scene, he had a wonderful sense of humor, and he gave the character so much more dimension.
I didn't even notice him changing the part.
Oh, yeah. And he would stand up much straighter when he was Superman, as Larry says. Larry Tye is the author of Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. He's going to be at the Jay here in St. Louis next Thursday. You mentioned Christopher Reeve. And, of course, since he gave up the Superman franchise and later died, we've had other people playing the role. Brandon Routh did it back in 2006. And then a couple of years ago, this British actor, Henry Cavill, took over the role. And now there's talk of the next one in the series being Superman versus Batman, and Henry Cavill will be back in it. But I'm curious, because we talked about George Reeves on TV and Christopher Reeve in the movie. Both of them kind of fell into the Superman typecast trap, didn't they?
They did, and they actually called it the curse of Superman, and that was that people would be typecast and bad things would happen to them. Christopher Reeve, as we know, was thrown from a horse and lost any motion. George Reeves ended up killing himself, shooting himself with a German Luger, and it was really tragic. And lots of bad things happened to lots of people who were in Superman movies, who were playing him on the radio and in all kinds of formats. And I think it had to do with the fact that enough people, Superman, after 75 years, enough people were involved with him that the odds of bad things happening were pretty high. But I also think that it was something you got typecast as. The only thing, so after you play the role of Superman, what can you do that can top that, I guess, is the question. And there aren't many things out there. On the other hand, a guy like George Reeves probably would never have made it in the acting world anyway, and he at least was known and a hero to kids all across the world as his Superman.
Yeah, I think I saw him in one. It was like a little bit part in some old movie or something like that. And it's like, oh, my goodness, it's George Reeves. And it's like,
he was actually in Gone with the Wind. He was one of the Tarleton twins as Gone with the Wind, a relatively minor role. But he thought that was going to launch him into a huge acting career and always blamed the Superman character as impeding that. I think he would have had bit roles like that Gone with the Wind thing, and he might have had, you know, been in big movies, but somebody totally unrecognizable.
Speaking of Gone with the Wind, didn't he get Clark Kent a little bit from Clark Gable's name?
He did. So he got Clark Kent from Clark Gable's name. Jerry Siegel did, but the character really was the reporter, the journalist that Jerry had always dreamed about being himself, and couldn't be, so he became the alter ego of Superman.
And how did Joe decide what Superman would look like? Did he base it on other personalities of the day?
Well, that's a good question. And what Joe said was that he would look in the mirror when he was trying to figure out what Superman ought to look like, which was a sign either of his great sense of humor or of his bad eyesight, because Joe was a scrawny guy who was as likely to be bullied as Jerry was, and he sure as heck didn't look anything like either Superman or Clark Kent.
Have Superman comic books sold consistently for the last 76 years?
They've had ups and downs, and at one point they were selling, when you had all the various comic books that he was in, and he was in at one point six at a time, they would sell millions in the course of a year. And now the audience, partly the prices soared so much that they're $2.99 or $3.99 per comic book now, and the audience has shriveled to the tens of thousands, and it's grown older because only older people can afford to buy the comic books. It used to be, when you and I were growing up, that we could look in the couch and find whatever loose change there was and go out and buy a comic book.
Yep.
And today you'd have to have a metal detector and look in your parents' wallet, I think.
I'm also curious about the difference in the way Superman was viewed as a hero. Obviously, as you said, the greatest superhero of all time, and certainly the one that has been around the longest at 75, now 76 years. But when he started out, America was still in the Depression in the late 1930s. We were still suffering from that, and we were trying to get out of that. And here we are coming out of a recession, not quite as bad as what it was in the 1930s. But along the way, we've had all of these bumps of history. Has Superman changed as what he has been and what he has done in those years?
Yes, so two answers. On the one hand, Superman has evolved more than the fruit fly. In the 30s, when he was created, we were in the middle of a depression, and the Superman we got was a butt-kicking New Deal liberal chasing slumlords and wife-beaters. In the 40s, we go to war, and Superman's helping take us to the war. In the 50s, Americans are looking for a red under every bed, and so was Superman. In every era, he gave us a hero that seemed perfectly suited to that era, to the point where a few months ago, Superman quit the Daily Planet in the comic books and became a blogger.
So, oh my goodness. That's not right.
That's the evolution. But the other side of the story is, and the reason why I think he's really survived this long, is that in terms of who he was at his core, he's not changed at all. We had plenty of dark heroes like Batman. We had plenty of fraught and over-anxious heroes like Spider-Man. We had one hero of the light who instinctively knew the difference between right and wrong and always did right. And as old-fashioned and as clunky as that seems, it was reassuring. So whether we were going to war or going into a recession, whatever we were dealing with, he was the guy who always stood for the best that we thought we could be. And I think that's the key to his survivability.
So did the guys that created Superman, did they come up with the planet Krypton, and he came down as a baby and was nurtured by the Kents and sent off to school and everything like that? Did they come up with that?
They did come up with all that, but they didn't come up with it in one swoop. They basically had very little idea where they were going issue to issue. So at the beginning, there was a suggestion that this hero came from somewhere far away. And it wasn't until that was in the early Action Comics. It wasn't until about a year later that we got the backstory about the baby from Krypton. And every issue, one of the fun things was, and one of the reasons why 10-year-old or 12-year-old kids could relate to this, is that Jerry and Joe were a bit kid-like, and they, you know, they would give him new powers and take away powers. If readers got angry, they'd get the feedback, and they might change the character a bit. It wasn't like we were getting an entire world created all at once. These were kids who had an imagination to think maybe an issue or two ahead.
Larry, my friend Joe just texted me, and I don't actually know what this means. Maybe you can answer it. He said, ask your guest about the controversy about the S on Superman's cape. Do you know what he's talking about?
I'm not sure just what he's talking about. The S, so maybe the controversy that he's talking about is there were suggestions over the years that the S meant Superman, that the S meant Siegel, that the S was for Schuster. There were all kinds of debates about where that came from, and the truth is that I think that it came from just Jerry's, as he suggested in his memoir, just his wanting this ultimate superhero that he calls Superman, and so he put an S there. But
although, if we remember the movie, you know, when Marlon Brando is wrapping up the baby Jor-El, is he Jor-El or Kal-El? I can't remember.
It was, so Marlon Brando was Jor-El, the dad, and Kal-El was the baby.
Okay, so he's wrapping up his baby on Krypton to get him off of the planet. Again, the names are Jor-El and Kal-El. There's no S in there at all. Mm-hmm. Well, why'd they happen to choose a blanket with an S on it?
Exactly. So those are backstories that never quite answered the question, and the truth is that we're not quite sure. Jerry was brilliant at telling a different version of the story just about every time he told it.
Something I've always wondered, too. I didn't figure this out. When I was a kid watching it, it was like somebody would get out kryptonite, and then Superman would lose all his powers, and it could kill him. But he came from the planet Krypton, and isn't that where kryptonite came from?
It is where it came from. And the so, honestly, that story about kryptonite was there from almost the beginning, but it was on the shelves of DC Comics. Jerry's editors decided that making Superman too vulnerable would destroy this whole sense of this superhero character, and they didn't use it. And then there was a point when they were sort of desperate for a new storyline that they decided Superman had become a bit too powerful. He started out in the comic books only being able to jump high, and then it was on the radio show where he learned to fly. He started out being able to lift big boulders, and he ended up being able to lift real planets. And I think it was that they decided at some point that he was so powerful that people could no longer relate, so they wanted to give him some vulnerability. So they start out with green kryptonite, and then they decide that's not enough, so let's give him red and blue, and everything got so complicated that you needed a dictionary to figure out what the shade of kryptonite was and what it could do to Superman.
Wow. Well, let me get the plug in here for you again, Larry, who will be here in town next Thursday, Larry Tye. His book is called Superman, The High-Flying History of America's Most Enduring Hero. I guess you'll be talking about this stuff and answering questions at the J next week. Is that right?
I will, and I'll be talking about what his true religion and ethnicity was. But the I assume that your listeners are smart enough to know that over time, every religion on the face of the earth has claimed Superman is theirs.
I put him up there with the Flying Spaghetti Monster. next Thursday at the J, the Steinberg Complex, you can get details by going to stljcc.org. Larry Tye, the author of The History of Superman. Thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.